people to understand the needs of adolescents today. You know, most school-based health centers in this country do not prescribe or dispense contraception because of the controversy.
Well, that's John Schlitt of the National Association of School-Based Healthcare reacting to a main school that has decided to offer middle school girls, that's girls from 11 to 13, birth control right out of the school. We talked about this a little bit last week on the program, and of course the Maine school board decided to take this action. We'll be talking about it here in the first hour of Issues, etc. Some audio open lines. We'll get an NPR report in on this Maine school that's offering birth control to middle school girls. A PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly story on a debate between a famous atheist and a famous Christian. In fact, one of those debaters, Alistair McGrath, has been a regular guest here on Issues, etc. And then PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly also has a report on Muslims in the UK, the largest religious minority in the United Kingdom. All of that and more during audio open lines here in the first hour of the program. We are coming to you live this Monday, October the 22nd. I'm Todd Wilkin, and thanks for tuning us in. You can join us 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us right here in the studio with questions or comments on anything we're talking about during audio open lines or for the next 3 hours of the program. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest in the second hour of the program to talk about God's law and God's gospel. He's pastor of Hope Lutheran Church in Aurora, Colorado. And then in the third hour of the program, some more audio open lines. This weekend's Values Voter Conference, held by the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C., had virtually every Republican candidate there speaking, trying to make the case that they are the best choice for the values voter. Although, interestingly, in a piece that we've got for that last hour of the program, we hear about an ABC News poll that was taken several months ago. And when asked to rank the various issues like war in Iraq, economy, health care, you name it, values and social issues came in at the bottom of the list. And only 2% of the prospective voters polled there said that that would be the deciding factor for them. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Also some audio from Mitt Romney. He was on CBS and several other places explaining his religion, explaining his position on the life issue, explaining his issue on gay marriage. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issues ETC at KFUO.org. Did you ever think that you would get to live long enough to see a middle school in Maine decide that it's time to give the birth control pill to 11-year-old students? Now, no one's surprised that 11-year-old students, not all of them, but some of them, are sexually active. No one's surprised about that. Although it should still shock us, I'm sure. Did you ever think you'd live long enough to see the schools say, you know what, we need to give these 11-year-old girls birth control pills. We need the parents to sign off on this, and then if the girl wants birth control, we give it to her without having to notify the parents. It's audio open lines. I didn't think I'd live long enough. If someone would have told me 5 years ago that this was going to be decided here in Maine, I would have said, well, you know, that's going to happen sooner or later, but later rather than sooner. What about you? Here's the story from National Public Radio, a report on this Maine school that has decided the birth control pill should go to 11-year-old girls.
School officials in Portland, Maine, scandalized a lot of people when they decided to provide birth control to middle school students. But organizations that monitor teen sexual activity nationwide say people should not be surprised that kids as young as 11 and 12 are having sex.
I don't think the public is yet willing to admit that adolescent sexuality really does, you know, begin in middle school.
John Schlitt heads the National Assembly on School-Based Healthcare.
I think it's a wake-up call for people to understand the needs of adolescents today. You know, most school-based health centers in this country do not prescribe or dispense contraception because of the controversy. So each community really sort of has to make a decision for itself how it wants to handle some of these really complicated, challenging public health concerns like teen pregnancy and HIV infection.
Schlitt says there are roughly 1,700 health centers serving about 2% of the nation's public schools. Only a third of these centers provide some form of birth control to students. Also, these centers today are just as likely to offer abstinence counseling as they are to provide pregnancy testing. As for birth control pills, a couple of recent surveys estimate that 20% of teenage girls today use them, but there are no official figures showing how many middle schools provide them, or condoms for that matter, with or without parents' permission. At King Middle School in Portland, Maine, students are supposed to get their parents' permission before they can get any medical attention or services, including physical exams, counseling, even aspirin. But if the clinic was to begin issuing birth control pills tomorrow, state law would prevent the school's clinic from telling parents without a child's consent.
Now, this is the real issue, I think, because the people who advocate for birth control really at any age. Because 11, if 11, why not 10? If 10, why not 9? If 9, why not 8? And you're saying, well, they haven't entered puberty by that time. Well, who knows? 100 years ago, girls weren't entering puberty at 11, but now they are. Elementary school? Birth control in elementary school. But here's the issue. It has to do with parental consent, and the law does not require, if they start issuing both birth control pills at this Portland, Maine school, the law does not require that parents be notified unless the child consents. We've gone from parental consent, which used to be the debate, now to child consent. Can an 11-year-old legally give consent to anything? What are the statutory rape laws in Portland, Maine? Can an 11-year-old give consent? Or if an 18-year-old decides to rape an 11-year-old and argue, hey, she gave her consent, and a lawyer comes back and says, well, that's just ridiculous. Well, she gives her consent for the birth control or parental notification for the birth control in school. This is not about people being shocked or surprised that 11-year-olds, some of them, might be having sex. That's not what this is about. This isn't about stodgy old people who can't get with the sexual revolution. This is about our kids. This is about whether or not parents are permitted to parent their kids when they're at school, too. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It always starts like a little spark. It only takes a spark to get a fire going, they sing. It always starts like a little spark somewhere in Maine or Massachusetts or one of the East Coast cities. And then, sooner or later, we're talking about it in Middle America. And it may be something, well, that's never going to happen in my public school. Maybe it will. So what are you going to do about it? 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850. It's Audio Open Lines, live this Monday, the 22nd of October. I'm Todd Wilkin. I want to hear from you. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Issuesetc@kfuo.org. I've got an 11-year-old at home. Not a girl. My son is 11 years old. I take him to middle school every morning. I drop him off. I see these girls that are walking in, these tiny little girls. And I'm thinking to myself, in Portland, Maine, those girls can go into their school now, go to the school nurse or whoever it is that's going to be dispensing these things, ask for the birth control pill, get it, and their parents don't have to know unless they want their parents to know. And what 11-year-old girl who is having sex and wants birth control pills is going to want her parents to know? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issuesetc@kfuo.org.
The head of the state's biggest parents group says that's going to be a problem.
I would be devastated if I found out my child had this done without me approving it.
Tammy Breen, president of Maine's Parent Teacher Association, says she'd be in favor of requiring parents' consent for any and all health-related services at the very beginning of the school year.
You know, give them more specifics so that they can say, yes, they can have a physical, or they can't have a physical without my approval, you know, those types of details.
In Portland, school officials say most of the phone calls and emails they've received have been from angry parents who argue that only parents, nobody else, should decide whether their child should use any kind of birth control. This is going to be a huge issue, says Lori Gramlich, one of seven school committee members who voted in favor of providing birth control pills to 6th, 7th, and 8th grade girls. But Gramlich says it would have been more troubling to do nothing. She spoke to NPR's Day Today.
I mean, I guess kind of what brought me to the conclusion of voting for this was we know that there are young people having intercourse. We know they're having unprotected sex. But if we can do whatever we can to prevent one teen pregnancy, then I think we've done our job.
It's still not clear when King Middle School will begin dispensing birth control pills or patches to students. But already opponents of the policy are mounting a recall of the committee members who voted for it. Claudia Sanchez, NPR News.
All right, there's the story. That's one thing that could be done. Recall the members that voted for it. Of course, that doesn't change the policy yet at this main school. And we heard it again, that argument that was put forth by one of the members who voted for it. Look, they're having sex anyway, and we want to if we can prevent even one teen pregnancy, we've done our job. Do you remember those days when school boards worried about math and reading and history and chemistry and science and PE and homecoming and the school athletic program and field trips? And didn't consider it their job to either promote or in any way stand in a parent's way when it came to their kids having sex? When a school board might, if they found out that there was a problem with kids having sex in school, might have actually even called the parents in question, maybe even called them down and said, what the heck are you doing? When a school board might have even said, this is a problem that needs to be solved at the source. That is, we have 11-year-olds having sex. Rather than simply treating the symptoms, let's just prevent one teen pregnancy, and we can go home and sleep well at night knowing that we've done our jobs. Let's not even get into the argument of whether or not giving out birth control to 11-year-old girls encourages them to engage in sexual activity. I don't know. I mean, I've only got two kids at home, and my expertise in this is purely from observation and that limited experience, but I think it does encourage it. Not among all of them, but certainly if they know the possibility is out there, they can go to school without their parents' consent and get whatever they want. But let's lay that, I think it does encourage it. That's my opinion. But let's lay that argument aside. In what other realm of activity that 11-year-olds engage in that we don't want them to engage in, at least we say we don't want them to engage in it, do we say they're going to do it anyway, let's facilitate it so that it has the, so that we can control the outcome? In what other realm? 11-year-olds smoke pot, don't they? Not all of them, but some of them do. Well, they're going to do it anyway. Let's do it. Let's give them the safest, let's give them the safest way of getting their pot that we can't be. We don't want them to go on the wrong side of the tracks to get their weed. So let's just provide it for them at school. Or find a reputable provider where they don't have to travel down to the wrong side of town where they might get in trouble, or they might get in falling with the wrong crowd, or they might actually get hurt. Because at the other end of the drug deal, there's always a gun, right? Do we make that argument? They're going to do it anyway. They're doing it anyway. Let's facilitate it. Oh, speaking of guns, do we make that argument when it comes to guns? I mean, nowadays it's not unusual for there to be weekly, sometimes bi-monthly sweeps of schools for drugs and firearms. It's a smart thing to do in an age of Columbine. But you know, these kids, you hear a story just about every week of a kid carrying a gun into school, trying it. They're going to do it anyway. Let's give them a gun locker at school so they can bring in their firearms and keep them safe. Trigger locks. Shouldn't that be part of the school supply list, along with the Crayolas and the erasers and the little bags you carry your pencils in and your lined college ruled notebooks? Trigger locks, or maybe even, since we don't want them carrying the armor piercing ammo in their various firearms that they're going to bring to school anyway. Come on, folks. It's the 21st century. Let's make sure that they have the safest possible ammunition for their firearms. No hollow points, no full metal jacket, no exploding rounds, none of those kind of things. Just the safest possible bullets. Heck, we could give them rubber bullets. The police have a lot of those for crowd control. They might pierce the skin, leave a bad mark. They might hurt, put out an eye, but heck, it's better than someone getting killed, and they're going to do it anyway. Why didn't we just give those Columbine teenagers rubber bullets? Because we knew it was going to happen sooner or later, didn't we? And if we can prevent one school shooting with rubber bullets, I think we've done our job.
You know, an educator called in last week when we were talking about this Maine birth control issue, and he brought up a great point. The big push in schools nowadays is obesity. So we're taking Coke machines out of schools, and we're handing out birth control pills. What is going on?
God forbid that these kids should have an unhealthy body mass index. God forbid that their body mass index be too high. So we'll take out the soft drink machines, and we'll take out the unhealthy items in their school lunches. But you know they're going to drink those soft drinks anyway. They might even smuggle them into school. And they're going to eat that bag of chips instead of the salad or the green beans or whatever else the lunch lady's serving. They're going to eat it anyway. They're going to take the green beans and the stack of fries with the cheese sauce, and they're going to eat the cheese fries and going to throw the green beans away. They're going to eat it anyway. Where else in the realm of human activities that we don't want our 11-year-olds involved in, do we allow an argument like they're going to do it anyway? Let's make it easier. I heard Glenn Beck, and you heard it too. We played it for you during Audio Open Lines last week, a debate when this was still undecided by the Maine School Board. And Glenn Beck said, look, the easiest solution here of all, the safest solution of all, is copulation rooms. The back stacks of the library, there's no privacy back there. Copulation rooms, it's a great idea. Because they're going to do it anyway. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We're talking about this Maine school that, surprise, surprise, decided to offer middle school girls, 11-year-old and up, the birth control pill. Any thoughts? IssuesETC@KFUO.org, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Well, don't think about your kids or your grandkids, but think about also your kids' kids when they're growing up, when this just might be routine. I have to sign a consent form for any of my kids to get anything, and I'm talking about Advil, Motrin, aspirin, you name it. I have to sign a consent form. In fact, I not only have to sign the consent form, I have to go to my family physician and get the doctor to sign off along with me for my child to receive anything more than a Band-Aid at school. I had to sign a release form that if my child were seriously injured at school, the school could take my child to the doctor or to the hospital without my immediate consent. I gave prior consent to putting them in an ambulance and taking them off if they were seriously injured at school, but not for birth control pills. I took my dog to the kennel a couple weeks ago, to the kennel, and I had to sign a release form for my dog that if anything went wrong, she's an old dog, so that the kennel owner could take the dog to the vet to treat an emergency, but she needed my consent. Not with my 11-year-old daughter and birth control pills. Okay, so there's some debate here. It says contraceptives would be available to girls in the 7th and 8th grades with their parents' permission. So why is it? Why did it say in the NPR piece that under current Maine law, let's get a lawyer to explain this to us. What's the difference between the policy of the school, which can be changed at a moment's notice? All the board has to do is change the policy. The policy of the school and Maine law that does not require parental consent for the birth control pills to these girls. Let me just ask you this question. The school nurse at this school, who obviously thinks this is a dandy idea, and the school board who voted for this obviously think it's a dandy idea so far. Do you think that they're going to call the parents if the law doesn't require them to call the parents? If Maine law doesn't require them, be realistic. If Maine law doesn't require them to call the parents. It said in the story, Jeff, that Maine law does not require them. Play it again. We'll play it again. It's right in the middle of the story. It said Maine law requires it. We'll find it. Andy's calling from Kirkwood. Andy, welcome.
Todd, I think I have a solution for this parental notification and authorization thing. A friend of mine's got a kid in high school, and he plays sports. And before he can play sports, he has to have a physical, and he has to have signed permission from his parents. So let's just declare sex a sport, and then they have to get the parental permission, see?
An extracurricular activity.
Absolutely.
So like wrestling, football, basketball, yeah. Volleyball, baseball. So, yeah. See, I think you're onto something here, Andy, because then the kids would be required to have a physical before it, if we just treat it like any other sport. And it has its parents have to sign off saying that, you know, if I let my kid play football, which is a dangerous sport, and he happens to get injured in the course of playing football, I signed off and said, that's all right. So let's say he gets his neck broken playing football. The parent has to sign a waiver saying, look, I take full responsibility for the fact that my child might be injured, even seriously, playing this sport at school. So I'm not going to sue the school or the board or the district or anyone else. I think Andy's on to something. In advance of the school year, there's a physical exam required and parental consent for the kid to engage in sexual activity as a sport. Then it's all covered under the athletic department. The AD can be in charge of all of the sexual activity. They can open up the copulation rooms. The birth control can flow freely, and the condoms can be freely dispensed. And the school will control all of this. Don't you worry your head at all, parents. We're protecting your children. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. This first hour is audio open lines. We've heard a report from National Public Radio on a Maine school in Portland that's decided to offer middle school girls the birth control pill. Concordia University St. Louis Center is offering classes one night a week. If you're thinking about that associate's degree that you never finished, or the bachelor's degree that you're still trying to work on, or the Master's of Business Administration, think about Concordia University St. Louis Center. Give them a call this week, 314-984-8840, 314-984-8840, or go to the What's New section of our website, issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org. Under that's what new section, you'll find Concordia University St. Louis Center. When we come back, more on Audio Open Lines, a PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly story about a debate between a famous atheist and a famous Christian. And it's nice to see them at least meeting face to face for the debates. That's coming up after this break. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We're coming to you live Monday, it's the 22nd of October.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul writes, "For it is not the one who commends himself who is approved, but the one whom the Lord commends." So just how does one obtain this commendation from the Lord? Let's ask Pastor John Lukomsky next time on our 10:05 Bible study as we finish up 2 Corinthians chapter 10.
The Bible Study on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
I studied what I call good men.
Dr. Archibald Hart, author of the book, The Sexual Man.
Christian men today need reassurance that the way they are is perfectly normal.
A candid and practical discussion for men and parents of boys on what it means to be Christian, male, sexual, and normal. Coming up next time on Focus on the Family.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
United Nations agencies want African countries to make abortion legal and say the rights of women can't be respected unless they do.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The UN continues to pressure poor countries to adopt its pro-abortion policies. African nations have largely resisted those efforts, and some, including Tunisia, Kenya, and Uganda, have led efforts to keep language promoting abortion out of treaties and other UN documents. A 2006 survey conducted by the Pew Research Firm shows residents of African nations are strongly pro-life. Instead of coercing expensive abortion programs, the UN should be giving funds to prenatal and postnatal health care.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, where values thrive, and online at thrivent.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. On Saturday, Governor Sonny Perdue declared a state of emergency in 85 counties in northern Georgia. A drought has depleted the water supply, leaving only 3 months of water in Lake Lanier, the reservoir supplying 3 million Georgians. 1 Kings 17 tells that King Ahab had forsaken the pure worship of God, fostering an all-roads-lead-to-heaven approach toward religion. The result? God turned up the heat, parched the earth for 3 years. God sent the prophet Elijah, who was a true believer, but sometimes self-righteous, to a widow at Zarephath. Nice lady, not theologically kosher. She had only enough flour left for one last meal before she and her son would die. Elijah asked her for food, but gave this promise. This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. The jar of flour will not be used up, and the jug of oil will not run dry until the day the Lord gives rain on the land. 1 Kings 17, verse 14. She trusted the promise, and she and her son survived. Somehow, I don't know precisely how, God is in the Georgia drought, too. And trusting his promise to never fail us or forsake us, he will bring through those who trust in him. One way or another, he'll bring water to the righteous and to the unrighteous.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, online at thrivent.com. We do more than work. We work with a purpose.
At King Middle School in Portland, Maine, students are supposed to get their parents' permission before they can get any medical attention or services, including physical exams, counseling, even aspirin. But if the clinic was to begin issuing birth control pills tomorrow, state law would prevent the school's clinic from telling parents without a child's consent.
Well, that's Claudio Sanchez of National Public Radio explaining the decision that was taken by a Maine school to offer birth control pills to middle school girls. It didn't say anything about boys, but, you know, boys can't get the prescription. They can obviously carry around the pills if they want to, but they can't get a prescription for the birth control pill. I'm no pharmacist, but I imagine a prescription for birth control for an 11-year-old girl might be different than prescription for a birth control pill for a full-grown woman. What does surprise me about this story is that they're actually using the word girl. Usually you don't hear the word girl when we're talking about this. We always hear about women. Women's reproductive rights and reproductive health. And more often than not, when they're talking about women, they're really talking about girls. At least they're being honest enough to call them what they are, girls at 11 years old. Okay, so the school decision states that if they dispense any kind of drugs, to your kids, they need parental consent. That's the form you fill out at the very beginning of the year. It's required, at least the school I send my kids to, required before the kid can even start school. You hand it in at registration. It's got your consent and perhaps a doctor's consent to say, give my kid aspirin, over-the-counter kind of stuff, and that's fine. All right? However, to quote Sanchez there, if the clinic, that is the school clinic, were to start giving birth control pills to 11-year-old girls now, Maine state law would prevent the school from informing the parents. What does that sound like to you, Jeff?
Sounds like a future court case to me.
I mean, it sounds like a fundamental conflict between school policy about drug dispensing drugs and the state law that says you can't tell the parents about birth control. You must tell the parents about everything else, but you can't tell the parents about birth control. And I ask the question, which is the school clinic? Which the school clinic is not set up by the school board, as far as I can tell. It's an independent clinic that's kind of outsourced into the school here that's been pushing for this birth control policy. Which is the school clinic going to do? By the way, Andy called in earlier with the question or with the comment that what we really ought to do is just declare sex to be a sport, along with football, basketball, baseball, soccer, you name it. That way, you can get the parental consent for participation in sex at the beginning of the year, just like you would for participation in any other sport. And you get the physical examination and all that kind of stuff. And of course, you know, if a kid gets if he gets the tar knocked out of him out there on the football field, and he needs to have his shoulder taped up, they don't run up into the stands and ask the parent, can we tape up your son's shoulder? No, they have a previous consent from the parents to go up and tape the kid's shoulder or his ankle, whatever needs to be done, put him back in the game, right? So you could get all the parental consent out of the way in advance if you just declared sex to be a sport, an extracurricular activity in our schools. And Andy called back off the air, said, young man he knows playing football got kicked off the team for having sex under the bleachers. But that would be solved, too, if you turned it into, you know, just put it under the athletic department. It's already open lines this Monday, October the 22nd. I want to hear from you about this Maine school that's now going to be giving birth control pills to 11-year-old girls. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us, issuezTC@KFUO.org. Ann's up next, calling from Crestwood. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Todd. This brings up more questions and more issues to me listening to you, and maybe I missed something at the beginning, but I have to wonder then, if this is by choice of the girl, then but can she, by choice, have sex with anybody, no matter how old they are? Can they be 25 or 30 or 40? I wonder, the whole thing seems like abuse to me, abuse of the child, and I'm wondering in what community are 11-year-olds having sex, and then if they are able to have sex at 11, they're hormonally able to do this. Why are they even, why is their body ready to have sex at 11? What is going on in our world? Is it the hormones from the meat that we're eating? I mean, what is going on? It just opens up too many questions to me.
All right, Ann, thank you very much. I'm not going to blame red meat. If you want to know why the puberty age is moving back, the best explanation I've ever heard is that we live in a very affluent, very healthy environment where all these ages are moving back. All the developmental landmarks are moving back. Oddly enough, we're entering puberty almost. We're getting close to almost a decade earlier than 200 years ago, especially for girls. But for girls and boys, we still don't mature. I mean, we've got a whole generation of baby boomers who are still teenagers, mentally. Whenever they enter puberty, it doesn't make any difference. I don't know. I don't know the answers to those questions. And it's distressing to think that a school nurse could have an 11-year-old walk in. Next time you run across somebody with kids of all different various ages, ask them to point out the 11-year-old girl and think birth control pill for this girl. All right? By the way, she doesn't have to have even entered puberty, as far as I know. I mean, they're physically capable of having sex before puberty. She doesn't even have to have entered puberty. I mean, there's nothing in this policy that says that she has to be a healthy recipient of the birth control pill. Give her the hormones anyway. So the 11-year-old girl comes in and she says, I need birth control. Why are you having sex? Yes, I am. With who? Oh, the 25-year-old who hangs out on the edge of the parking lot. Have a nice day. Kurt is calling from his car. Hi, Kurt.
Pastor Todd, I heard the gentleman talk about sex as a sport, but I don't think our founding fathers would have seen it that way. I think that the way our Supreme Court and the way our judges see it these days is that not only do all of us have the right to sex, we don't have the right to play tennis, or that's not a fundamental right to play tennis or football, but we do have the fundamental right to have sex, and not only that, sex without babies. That seems to be one of our most fundamental rights today, and anything that would infringe that, and for you as a parent to get in the way of the right of your daughter to have that fundamental right, I think our founding fathers really thought that, you know, sex without babies is pretty foundational.
Kurt, thank you very much. If you don't believe what Kurt just said, that young people today consider it their right to do this, their absolute inviolable right to do this without anyone looking over their shoulder and with every aid from the state they can possibly get, talk to them and they will tell you straight to your face. Andy's listening in Redbud, Illinois. Hi, Andy.
Yeah, my only concern was, or one of the concerns is, you're giving birth control pills to 11-year-old kids. What is the health risk involved giving this? I mean, there's health risks involved for 25, 30-year-olds. This is a kid that's just entering puberty. I mean, those sticking her with hormones that her body isn't regulated with, you can see a lawsuit coming there as well.
Well, thank you, Andy. You're right. I mean, that's another very big part of the concern here. How much longer after they're willing to give 11-year-olds the birth control pill in school will the argument be raised, if we give them the birth control pill, which is a certain amount of hormones, why, if they ask, can't we give them the Plan B or the morning after pill, which is the same hormone in a much larger dose? Why not? In fact, there are those who are arguing that should be offered over the counter without parental consent. Bill's calling from his car. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I kind of pick up on what Randy said, too, but the research that must have gone in to this decision had to be based on something. How long have they been trying this on 11-year-old girls to know that it's really something safe and there's not going to be any long-term effects to any of these kids? And now that it's being done now, is that research going to be pushed back so they're going to try it on 8-year-old girls, or... It just doesn't sound like a real health conscious. All of the hoops that they have to jump through to approve any other drug or any other application doesn't sound like it's been done here.
Bill, I don't know that any research was done at all. This was the decision taken by the school board. I'm sure that they didn't have the resources to do any research on the effects of birth control pills on 11-year-old girls. And it sounds like they just don't care, to tell you the truth. Sounds like they don't care what effects it's going to have. As long as, in the words of the member of the school board, we can prevent one teen pregnancy, we've done our job. Jerry's listening in St. Louis. Hi, Jerry.
Good afternoon, Pastor Todd. I just came in and turned on my radio and caught the end of your question with a caller about why the onset of puberty seems to be coming at an earlier age. And just today I happened to be listening to Focus on the Family, and the guest was, I don't know what research he has to support this, but he was suggesting that exposing young people to pornography at early ages will result in those earlier ages for puberty.
Hmm.
And it was just today's broadcast, and that might explain it, because I think probably you could even call your local television pornographic compared to what it used to be.
Well, certainly by comparison, Jerry, yes, thank you. Well, he raises another issue, which is kids surfing the net for pornography. I'll tell you what, those kids can't even get on a computer in the classroom, much less get on the internet, without going through every hoop in the world. But they're going to look at porn anyway, aren't they? So, and I just heard, I saw this in the paper yesterday, day before, where online pornography is easier to get than ever, ever, ever before. Just try Googling for any image. Helped my wife put together the preschool, her little preschool calendar that she does for her kids where she teaches. And you'll go looking for clip art for various little things, pumpkins and bats and things like that. And inevitably, there's a pornographic image when you Google for an image. Easier to find than ever. So the kids are going to be looking at online porn anyway. For that matter, they're also going to be cavorting with online predators anyway. Isn't school the safest place for them to cavort with online predators and to surf their online porn? I mean, isn't it? And do the parents really need to know about this? In St. John's, Michigan, here's Dennis. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Pastor. How are you?
Very well.
I'm a little confused. When did it become the school's job to prevent pregnancies in their children? The children don't belong to the school. They belong to the parents. Why is that a school function?
I do not know, Dennis. It's a great question.
I'm sitting here listening to all this, and I'm going, why is the government getting involved in this?
Well, technically, it's not the government at any level higher than the school board. The school board has decided, apparently, that they know better, or at least the people who run the clinic at the school know better than any parent of any 11-year-old girl in Portland, Maine, that goes to that school. They've decided that they know better. That's one thing we can conclude without any doubt. This school board has decided that when it comes to the parents of the 11-year-old girls at their Portland, Maine school, they know better than the parents. And the parents, come on. Since when do the parents need to know anything? They're just the parents, just mom and dad. For the remainder of this hour, we're going to be talking about a new Pew Forum poll on the political views of young white evangelicals. Interesting research. Dan Cox is our guest, research associate from the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life. Dan, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thanks for having me.
What surprises you most about the latest research on young white evangelicals?
I can tell you a couple of the most interesting findings that came apparent when I was doing this work was the dramatic movement away from the GOP in the last couple of years, and the drop of support for President Bush that we've seen in the last few years. For instance, in 2005, a majority of young white evangelicals, 55%, said they were Republican, and in 2007, that number has dropped to 40%. Now that's a 15-point drop in just 2 years.
What do you think accounts for that general drop in support for a particular party with young white evangelicals?
Well, it's difficult to say, and from the research I've done, and I don't have any hard and you know hard evidence for this. It could be a number of things. It could be dissatisfaction with the current administration. For instance, we look at approval of the president, and this group was one of the most supportive groups initially. In 2002, 87%. Approved of the job he was doing. Now, that's a higher approval rate than older evangelicals. And then we've seen a dramatic drop since 2002. Now, currently in 2007, only 45% give the president approval.
Has that decline in approval paralleled the general decline in approval of the population when it comes to President Bush's job approval?
It's actually it's steeper. So, for instance, in 2005, 70% of young white evangelicals still approved of the job he was doing. And among younger folks overall, it's been probably a 30-point drop since 2002. Among young evangelicals, it's been a 42-point drop. So it's definitely steeper.
We spoke briefly a moment ago about party identification. Where does it seem to be heading when it comes to young white evangelicals?
Sure. That's another interesting thing, is they're not all becoming Democrats. The majority of those that are moving away from the GOP are becoming either politically unaffiliated or becoming independent. So the Democrats, you know, despite this loss among GOP affiliation, we're not seeing, you know, dramatic gains among the Democrats.
So I'm looking here at the chart in the research from the Pew Forum, and in 2001, 16% of young white evangelicals under the age of 29 considered themselves Democratic, and in 2007 it's only 19.
Right.
But there's a pretty dramatic 15-point drop in those who consider themselves Republican?
Yes, from 2005 we're moving 55% who say that they're Republican to 40% in 2007. So it's a 15-point drop.
What do you think this means for the future of evangelical influence in general in the GOP?
Again, a very good question, you know, difficult to answer because we're working with real limited data, unfortunately. One of the reasons I sort of began looking at this group is because we've seen, and I'm sure you've seen, any number of stories about this group and their views on the environment, you know, and their voting behavior. But unfortunately, a lot of it is based on sort of anecdotal evidence, you know, and firsthand accounts. So, you know, we haven't really had a lot of hard data on this group. We do know that on issues like abortion and the death penalty, that they're very conservative. You know, 3/4 support the death penalty. Now, that's much higher than young people overall, of whom I think about 40% support the death penalty. On issues of abortion, you know, again, 70% support making it more difficult for women to get an abortion. Now, that's more conservative than older evangelicals, of whom only 55% support.
And do you see a trend in those numbers on the particular issues like war in Iraq, death penalty, abortion? Are they trending up or down with these young white evangelicals?
Sure. And again, you know, we don't have great trends on issues, unfortunately. But as far as the war with Iraq goes, they've registered significant levels of support for the war, consistently high. I mean, about 60% support think that the decision to go into Iraq was the right call. And that's the same level as older evangelicals. So they, you know, despite the fact that among the general public, you know, support for the war has dropped, you know, among young evangelicals, they're still very supportive.
You talked about politically unaffiliated. I was looking at the numbers there for the rise in the number of young white evangelicals that consider mm-hmm. themselves independent. Is that a separate category from politically unaffiliated?
It is. It's those who answer, you know, those who refuse to give an affiliation, or those who say they don't, just don't know. And those people we call politically unaffiliated, which is a different category than independent, and it's not shown, on, as you point out, in the line chart.
So the best we can infer here is that those who are exodusing or who are leaving the Republican Party, or at least stated affiliation with the Republican Party, the majority of those are probably falling into that category of the unaffiliated.
Right. Yeah. They're either independent or they're unaffiliated. Exactly.
I'm looking at this as a general picture. Young white evangelicals as conservative as ever, but less Republican than ever. Is that a pretty accurate picture?
I would say that that's fairly accurate, and I would only add one caveat that, you know, you look at, there are other issues out there, obviously, other than social issues, and one which I didn't include in my analysis, but I've seen recent numbers, is the environment, you know, which has been a lot in the news. And we do find that on the issue of the environment, you know, young evangelicals are less conservative than older evangelicals. You do see a sort of a generational break there. A majority are supportive of stricter laws and regulations, even at the expense of jobs and cost of the economy.
Is it would it be a safe conclusion that this may have as much to do with general dissatisfaction over in the late second term of George W. Bush than with any great shift in the ideas of young white evangelicals?
That's an absolutely, you know, fair speculative statement. I mean, I can't go there myself. I don't know for sure. But, yeah, I mean, I think overall it's definitely, you know, there's a good chance that, you know, this movement away from the GOP could be temporary. It could be a reaction, as you just said, you know, sort of a negative appraisal of the current administration. And then maybe, you know, post 2008, they could well shift back.
There's no way of telling how these young white evangelicals are going to be voting in 2008 based upon your data, is there?
No. We do know in 2004, close to 90% supported President Bush. You know, that was a higher rate than older evangelicals, of whom like 79% supported President Bush. So we know that, you know, in 2004, they were still, but again, you look at 2004, and they were still, you know, the approval rate was very high. So we really don't know, and we won't have, obviously, Bush won't be on top of the ticket in 2008. So it's difficult. I mean, you know, what their level of support for Republican and Democratic candidates may well depend on who's the nominee.
I've heard that this generation, or at least a segment of this generation from 18 to 29, is, in a sense, kind of a mini baby boom, or perhaps even numerically, but not as a percentage of the population, even a larger group than the baby boom generation of 46 to 64, those years.
The Generation Y is numerically comparable to the boomers in size.
But as a percentage of the population, not as big.
No, I believe, I don't have numbers in front of me, so you'll have to excuse me as I try to draw from my memory. I do believe as a proportion of that population, they will be as big as the boomers.
So that means where they go, in many ways, is going to affect the future of political affiliation in the United States.
Sure, yeah, young people overall, absolutely.
Dan Cox is research associate for the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life. He joined us to talk about the new Pew Forum poll on political views of young white evangelicals. You can find out more about this poll at pewforum.org, pewforum.org. Dan, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
Our Issues Etc. book of the month has to do with the political views and inclinations and activism of a certain group. It's not young white evangelicals, although some of them would probably fall into that category. Lutheran Pastors and Politics is the Issues Etc. book of the month for October. Issues in the Public Square, co-authored by a regular guest here on the program, Dr. Jeffrey Walls. You can find out more about this book by going to our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find the cover right there, issuesetc.org. Or you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and inquire about Lutheran Pastors and Politics, Issues in the Public Square, the Issues Etc. book of the month for October. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. When we come back from this break, we're going to talk about God's law and God's gospel, these two great teachings of Scripture without which one cannot understand the Bible. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller of Hope Lutheran Church in Aurora, Colorado, will be our guest for the next hour. I do invite your questions and your comments for that hour and the hour that follows, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio this Monday, October the 22nd, issuesetc@kfuo.org. In the third hour of the program, we're going to talk about values voters. There was a Family Research Council conference attended by the majority of the GOP candidates running for president in 2008. They all wanted to say something. They all wanted to say, I'm your man, to these, we're talking here about the core of the base of the Republican Party. Did they make their case? Who won the straw poll? We'll answer all those questions in the third hour of the program and play a little bit of Mitt Romney explaining his faith, explaining his change of position on abortion, explaining his apparent change of position on gay marriage, and some other things during audio open lines in the third hour of the program. 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, or email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. When we come back, God's law and God's gospel, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.